with us this morning, and I just want to thank God for the wonderful week that I've had. It was nice. Greta and I spent a week's staycation together, and it was just really nice to be in fellowship with my wife and to have a time of peaceful reconnection. So I just want to give God praise for that. This morning, we're in the third week of the series that we've been doing about Hope is Here. And we've been discovering all the ways that God brings us hope in the face of a world that is hopeless. The first week we talked about how Jesus brings us hope when we're weary from all the heaviness of life and how we don't have to walk alone. Last week we talked about the hope that comes from the grace of Jesus when we're broken because of sin and how we can forgive because we have been forgiven. And today, I want to talk about the hope that is given to us when we feel like we're facing more than we can handle, and we are the underdog. You know, there's a reason, I think, that so many of us like movies, classic movies, in our culture, and I know there's a lot of repeats. It seems like Hollywood doesn't really have an imagination anymore. It's like they're remaking all the old movies and trying to bring them back. And I think it's because they connect so well to us. Movies like Rudy and Rocky and Cinderella Man and Cool Runnings. Those are movies that in the recent months that I've watched as I recuperated, and they just are loved because they all have a common theme. They're movies about underdogs. They're films about unlikely characters overcoming amazing and overwhelming odds. And they all are told in their own unique way, and they're told in a different way, but they tell a story of hope, of overcoming. And so maybe these movies do something to us. Maybe we like these movies because we, at some level, all know what it feels like to face overwhelming circumstances that we can't overcome on our own. We cheer for the underdog because somehow we feel like it. If they can win, so can we. Life is full of daunting situations. There's all kinds of challenges. Parenting children can feel so incredibly overwhelming. Navigating global pandemics can be more than we can handle. Juggling careers and family can be hard to do as well. Growing in your faith and juggling this and defeating the sinful habits that we have in our lives can be a challenge. And I would argue that is because the things that we have challenges with are not meant to be done alone. They're meant to be done in community. And most importantly, they're meant to be done in partnership and overcome through our relationship with Christ. The Bible is full of stories of characters who, against all odds, experience victory. And there's a common thread in these stories throughout the Bible as well. The characters are fully aware that without God on their side, there is no hope of a favorable outcome. Left to themselves, they would face defeat. And one of those classic stories is David and Goliath. The account takes place long before David is king of Israel. And at this point, he's only a small boy. Let's read 1 Samuel chapter 17, just the first two verses at this point. Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle position, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines and facing each other. So just hours before David arrives at the front lines of a massive conflict between Israel and the Philistine armies, he is in the fields taking care of sheep. And so it's clear from the beginning of this story, as we read the scripture, that David has found himself in a position that is above his pay grade. The first readers of this text would have been overwhelmed by the change of scenery from the fields to the fight. We are rarely prepared for the fight that we get in life. The truth is that we are hardly ever prepared to handle what life throws at us. It's a phone call with a diagnosis. It's a discovery of infidelity. It's a temptation that we didn't see coming. No one asks to be placed in a position where there is no clear route to victory. You see, this is where David finds himself within the first few verses of this story. And it might be where you are today. When we find ourselves in this place, we need some kind of hope. Maybe you're facing cancer. Maybe you have some other difficulty going on in your family. Things have happened. I had the strokes in January, not something that we were expecting to deal with. My family has had a very stressful year. The idea of me not being around, the idea of all of these things that we thought were impossible a few weeks before it happened. But suddenly it was a reality. In some ways it felt hopeless. We weren't prepared to navigate a loss. It's at this point in time that we have to decide how we're going to respond. When you have to decide how you're going to respond. Do you give up and accept defeat? Or do you trust in God, who gives us the strength to carry on? So David arrives at the front lines to check on his brothers who are fighting in the Israelite army. And it is at this point that he gets his first real look at what they are facing. So let's continue reading verses 23 through 26 and 32 through 37. David left his things with the keeper's supplies. He ran to the battle lines and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out of his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. And now the Israelites have been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He keeps coming out to defy Israel. The king will give him great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is the uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here, and with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. And what David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." And Saul replied, "You aren't able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic, and he put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. And David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking, but he wasn't used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I'm not used to them." And so he took them all off. And then he took his staff, and he chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, and he put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. And meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bare in front of him, kept coming closer to David. And he looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. And he said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with the sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that this is not by sword or spear, but the Lord saves. The battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into his hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag, he took out a stone, he slung it, and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. You hear this passage, and you hear these words, and we see the determination that's in David. And though he's just a boy, he knows someone has to stand up to this threat, this giant who is making a mockery of his God. This threat is a massive man named Goliath, and Goliath was a decorated warrior from Philistine. He struck fear into the hearts of all who saw him. He was a giant. He was terrifying. The whole of the Israelite army was paralyzed with fear, and no one was willing to take on this giant. However, someone has to do something, and David is willing to take it on. What causes a young boy, an underdog, to take on such a mountainous task? The answer to that is hope. He knows how strong his God is. Hope that he will not fight this battle alone. Hope that with God's help, there is nothing that is impossible. Hope that what little he has to offer is enough. Does this sound familiar yet in your life? David's reasoning for this hope comes from God's faithfulness in the past. He has heard the stories about how they've been delivered in the Red Sea, across the Red Sea from the Egyptians. He's heard these stories. He knows the faithfulness that God has given to the Israelite people. God was with him while he was protecting the sheep in the field, and he was able to kill the lion and the bear. Surely the Lord would protect him now as he went against this giant. You see, if God is for us, nothing can stand against us. When we find ourselves in these seasons of struggle, sometimes we have to remind ourselves of how God has been with us in the past. And that's why we have to go through these challenges of life. That's why each of you have lived the life that you have lived so far today. There's the things that are in your past for a reason, and the past is what helps you see the hope that God can offer to you. Hope is a derivative of trust. And so as you go through those battles, as you walk through those valleys, we learn to lean on God. Whether we want to or not, we learn to lean on God. And just as God was faithful to David in the past, God was with him when he was protecting the sheep in the field from the lions and bears, we believe that something or someone is trustworthy. And when we do, it gives us hope. It's like a child who plays with his father in the pool. I remember Ashley, when she first came to live with us, hated water. And so as I tried to teach her how to swim, and I watched her, she would launch into that pool from the side, into the deep end, as I'm sitting there treading water, I tried to keep myself above the water. She trusted enough that I was going to save her that she jumped into that deep end of the pool after me, even though I was doing what? Struggling to keep myself above the water, right? But she came and climbed on my neck, and those are some of the greatest things. But that's what Christ does for us. There's only a trust in the Father or the Mother's love to catch them as they have in the past. They're hopeful that when they splash in the water, their parent will keep their head above the water. You see, David's confidence comes from his faithfulness, God's faithfulness, and it's the drive that David needs to overcome. Saul the king of Israel tries to fit David with armor and weapons to protect him in the conflict, but none of them fit. You see, it wasn't like Walmart back at, you know, today. Back then, they had sort of a one-size-fits-all type armory, right? They had these guys that were making these things out, and you either fit in it or you didn't. And so, as he was disadvantaged enough by being young, now here he is without armor, without any type of sword. And so he takes the slingshot and the five stones that he has practiced with all these years. And after Goliath breathes out threats to him, he responds by telling him that as Goliath fights with a sword, spear, and a javelin, he is letting God fight his battles for him. And that's the third point of our sermon this morning. That's how we need to fight our battles. Maybe you don't feel equipped to overcome the things that you face in life. Maybe, you feel overwhelmed. You're in good company. Maybe you know that your trial that you're going through right now is just too much. This is a good place to start. It's only when we realize that our battles are not waged in the conventional way, but rather through the Spirit, that we will begin to experience God fighting for us. For David, this battle against Goliath is a spiritual battle, and it takes God's involvement to experience a victory. Paul speaks to this in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Paul reminds his readers that if our battles are not really about the physical world around us, then we can't overcome them by physical means. That means you and I can work ourselves into the ground, but we can't overcome the battles of darkness that surround us in this world. That means that you and I can come up with every program from here to next year, and we will never save or allow people to see Jesus Christ in every way that needs to be done. It takes a spiritual approach. We fight our battles by submitting to the will of God. We have to do what God wants us to do. Until we are able to do that, we will not see the fruit that we are toiling for. We fight our most difficult circumstances by bringing them to God in prayer. We fight the evil that we come against by inviting God to intervene on our behalf. And David calls upon God as he engages Goliath on the battlefield. And so with a single stone, a precise throw, and the power of God, David's shot flies straight and true and connects with Goliath's forehead. And the giant falls to the ground, dead. You see, this single victory turned the whole tide of the war. The Philistines run and the Israelites pursue, and we can read that in verses 51 and 52. But suddenly, the once frightening Philistine army and the once frightened Israelite army is emboldened by this little boy in his sling. Because of David's bravery and trust in God, they're all given hope that they too can be a part of the triumph of God. And here's the thing. Hope is contagious. Hope is contagious. David's hope in God spreads like wildfire. And so the fact that he was able to stand there in faith and challenge this giant, and God defeated the giant, it spread throughout the entire army to the point that they all trusted in the Lord again, and they knew the power of God. And so the entire story changes. The entire narrative takes a new tone. It's no longer about defeat, which is what those first few verses were about. It's now about victory. There is something that happens within a fellowship of faith when just one person has the audacity to believe God for great things. There was one lady in the church at Mount Hall that I pastored that every Sunday, she just claimed, every Sunday claimed that there were going to be more people come to church, that there were going to be more people come to Christ, that there were just every Sunday. And some Sundays we'd show up and there'd be less people, and some Sundays we'd show up and there'd be more. But she claimed every Sunday that there would be more people show up. Every Sunday. And And through her power and her prayers, God heard that. Just one person had the audacity to believe God for great things, and the church benefited greatly. It gave strength. You know, there's a lot of Sundays when you show up sometimes as the preacher, and there's less people there than there were the week before. It's kind of hard to get excited about going up and sharing the message. Sometimes as a worker, sometimes as a member of the congregation, as you serve on a board or committee and you see things that don't go exactly the way you think they ought to, it gets frustrating. But just one good thing happens in your midst, and it changes the whole dynamic. Hope is contagious. It begins with one person in the congregation. One person in the congregation who believes God can use them to lift others out of poverty. It starts with one person who wants to see children in the community impacted in the summer by a vacation Bible school or a basketball program or a God's club. It takes one person with a heart for overseas mission. It takes one person who believes that prayer changes things. It could be the spark that ignites a whole congregation of hope. That person could be you. Ancient church father Thomas Aquinas said it this way: faith has to do with things that are not seen, and hope has to do with things that are not at hand. So even though we can't see how God might come through in some of the adversities and trials that are facing you in life, faith is believing that it's still possible. When a whole church begins to function this way, when all of us as a body begin to function in this way, the whole world will change. As we prepare to have our invitation hymn, if you don't know him today, if you haven't heard about Jesus Christ until this morning, don't leave here without talking to somebody about Christ. We want to make sure that you understand the importance. The time is now. We're going to be sharing the Lord's table. We're remembering the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, the cross, the sacrifice that he made so that we might have an everlasting life with him and to be in his glory. The invitation hymn, "When I Survey the Wondrous Cross," hymn number